City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 351. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm saying all my numbers now, like 2010, 2010. I don't say like 2010. So I'm wondering, I say 351. Like I just call the podcast 351.
351. I've gotten into this weird habit of saying zero, like 2010.
Yeah.
Because
I like
sometimes
it.
People think you mean the letter O.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but I'm slightly obsessed with not confusing that.
The
issue.
Numerology. I need to ask, like, Neil Paris used to come on our show as our astrologer, or need a numerological person to say, like, what's the most powerful way in which to say this stuff? Does it matter how you say it, even if
know.
The numbers are the same?
I don't know anything about numerology.
I don't either.
Except that my birth date is also the date of the Norman conquests. And people always think when I put down my birth date that I'm referring to the Norman conquest. And I didn't actually even know what the Norman conquests were until somebody told me that there was
that your birthday is the same date.
Well, like 1066, October 66.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, 1066.
Interesting.
Yes.
Huh. So the big Grammys were last night.
I know, I watched them. I love award shows. Whenever people get cynical about award shows, I'm like, did you think
they
weren't?
My girlfriend is very cynical about
well,
them
I mean,
these
the
days.
Thing is, did you think they weren't dumb? I mean, they're always dumb.
No, they are always dumb, but I think they used to be more more unexpected,
Well, that's
and
what I liked about last night.
People didn't always, like, just thank their
lawyers.
Managers and their attorneys, which didn't happen all last night, but...
No, you know what I liked about last night was that the people who performed, even Dave Matthews was more of a sort of a traditional performance mode, right? They all did something a little theatrical, right? I feel
they
like,
have to now. The bar has been raised.
I know,
so
but I love that. I posted on Facebook this old clip of Sammy Davis Jr., Frank Sinatra, and Liza at that concert they did in the 80s as sort of an example of like old school entertainment. And I sort of appreciate people. You know, whether or not I like it isn't the point. The point is that like people are giving us some entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
were you entertained?
I was entertained. I was very entertained.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. The opening. Gaga had like the opening spot. I couldn't believe she was the opening.
I know.
I thought that was so brilliant.
People love
a
her.
Year and a half ago, nobody knew who the frick she was. She was at Windy City Gay Idol.
I know,
June
right?
2008. Her CD had not even released. And here she was, January 2010.
Right.
Opening act of the Grammys.
With Elton John.
Which is the coveted slot. Then Elton John pops up out of the ground.
I know. I loved it. It was
with
so
mud
theatrical.
All over him and the glasses.
The thing was all the, like... I think that what people bemoan is the idea that like the music gets lost. But I have to say the cool
not
thing about her is that she always sings well. She plays piano almost all the time. Every time I hear her do the same songs, you know, she's doing the same songs. There's always a little something different. You know, last night she mixed in your song, the Elton John song. And so I feel like musically she's really interesting and she gave a show.
Yeah. Well, and what she has always shown is that I'll do the dance thing with you. I'll give you that big number, right. And I will always come back to the core, which is me singing and playing. It's almost like her trend now.
I love it. Well, it shows that she's an actual musician. I mean, I like her. You know, we'll see.
I love her.
I love her, too, and I will see what she continues to do, whether or not she continues to grow or if she's sort of like the Cyndi Lauper of her.
I don't think she will be.
I love Cyndi, and Cyndi's made great music since, but she got associated with a wacky look and a wacky sound and a wacky thing, and so people have not really taken Cyndi seriously ever since.
Yeah, but what I'm thinking about with Gaga is that she is pushing the bar so much higher for all the other performers.
I really felt like...
You know, and another artist that I think is starting to do that, you know, started to do that too last year was Pink, when she got so excited about this circus work and she got so excited about aerial work.
Well, somebody said that
work.
She was actually used to be a gymnast when she was younger. So,
well, one would think. I mean, because she's strong.
Well, yeah, being
as
a circus
ox.
Person, I thought she did a pretty good job. I mean, she did fairly simple, but to sing while spinning.
Sing and spin like
and
that?
And not be out of breath.
And get wet, dip down in water.
And and to spin and be upside down while she's singing, you know, that's a lot of breath control.
Yeah.
You know, for anybody who's ever sung, you know, you sort of need a little control of your diaphragm, but if you're sort of stretched out upside down. So
but
I thought,
also doing all that without a net over
she
all
totally,
those
I mean,
people.
She won. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, she won the night. I mean, that was so cool because it was so unexpected and so show-offy in a great way. And her body looked sick.
Yeah, and her body looked sick.
It was just gorgeous. Yeah. And then she still could sing.
Yeah.
Now, Beyonce also looked gorgeous. And Beyonce, I have to say, sang the shit out of that.
She did, but I just hated the way she did it. I just hated the whole thing.
She tripped, actually, at one point. I was afraid she was
going to
twist her ankle.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, they had those grates. I thought those grates for the breeze to come up was, you know, good for the rappers.
She needed more breeze. In fact, you know, she is the queen of the wind machine.
Yeah, there was
and
not
she
enough
needed
wind.
A better one. Better one because that
a better one
a better wind machine a better wind
she needed a better wind
she needed a better wind she did a better wind to show her off the stage I thought she was great. That wig got in her way. I mean that wig was all
hair.
In her face,
you know, but I really just wanted her to have a moment that I thought that what she could have done was she could have started If I Was a Boy, and then she could have, and then she went into Alanis Morissette, which I was kind of like, okay, why? And then
she's been doing it in concert,
but then she should have gone right into Single Ladies. She should have left us with what we've all been infected with this whole year, to me. Which
it was,
interesting
that she didn't do Single Ladies.
I really thought that, you know, I really loved her performance. I think it was at the AMAs. I can't remember where there were just, I mean, it looked like there were just hundreds of Beyoncés doing the Single Lady. Yeah. And I loved that. I actually thought in a moment it would have been really funny if she had had those guys in those things.
Right.
Like somehow rip them off and do something, you know. I mean, even...
Or get the entire audience to do it.
I mean, the entire audience could have done it. It's obviously been this trend of people doing it on YouTube and all of this. I mean, I just felt like it was a missed moment. And the other moment wasn't powerful enough to eclipse the moment that we all wanted to have.
Yeah, the Alanis Morissette moment wasn't enough to eclipse the Single Ladies.
And I didn't think she sang that well. And I don't.
Oh,
quite
I did think she sang. I think she did.
I really did not. I really.
That's her voice, though. I mean, she has
a great voice. I love her voice. I couldn't believe she didn't sing any of Halo. I mean, I thought that's a great song.
Well, she did that Haiti for Halo thing on the Haiti concert.
Yeah.
That was so dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was.
I would have just given everybody. I mean, you rock in that big of a house. I would have given them what they wanted, which was Single Ladies, and I didn't understand it. And I just did not like her dress.
Yeah,
she was getting her award.
Yeah, she was forgettable in a way that
which
she
Beyonce
usually isn't.
She wasn't when she walked on the stage. And went, oh, this is going to be good.
Oh, even when she walked up, that sort
she
of
walked
like,
up. I was
strut.
Like, oh God, I love the way she walks. And then it just went downhill to me. I just thought it was too angry and.
You know who I thought was great, and people aren't talking about it at all, was Andrea Bocelli and Mary J. Blige.
Well, you know I love Bliggy.
Oh, I love her so much, and I never really like him, but boy, oh boy, can that man sing.
Boy, and she has to sing so hard to keep up with him, and she always does, because she sung with him a lot. You know, Foster loves to put the two of them
together. Well, I thought that was really beautiful, and it's live, and then the tragedy of the night.
Yeah, which.
Was poor Taylor Swift. Like, she won all these awards. She won all these awards, which I don't get.
I don't get either.
I mean, she's adorable.
She's adorable.
I feel like her the way I feel about Sandra Bullock. I don't really like her movies, but I think she's adorable. And
oh,
I like
now
her as a
I
person.
Like Sandra Bullock. I don't put Sandra Bullock in the same
meaning that I like
Taylor
Sandra Bullock
Swift.
As a person. I like her. Yeah. I like her on talk shows. I think she's a beautiful girl. She's a great celebrity, but I never see her. I don't care for her. I never see the benefit
really?
Of her movies.
See, I'm much more of a Bullock than a Roberts fan. Except except Notting Hill.
But anyway, so Taylor Swift seemed like the, you know, the Emperor's New Prom dress. And then it was a cool idea to have Stevie Nicks come out. But then Stevie Nicks couldn't harmonize because Taylor Swift couldn't stay on the tune.
So off key up at the top.
I know, and Stevie Nicks looks so beautiful and is in such great voice
and
at her age.
We love her.
We love her. And I thought Stevie must be kicking herself. Like, she was trying to be cool, and she probably said yes because, oh, that's really sweet.
It's Taylor Swift.
And, you know, she also loves to promote the young people.
The young singer-songwriter females,
she's into
especially,
it.
Especially.
And, you know, and it is cool what Taylor Swift has done. I mean, God bless her.
But
she sounded horrible.
Yeah, I really thought that was a missed opportunity. I really thought Beyonce was maybe going to win that. And
it should have been Gaga, really. I mean, if you want to talk about it, I mean, the album that's gonna
Yeah.
I mean, I think when people look back on this era, right, like the, you know, the 2000s, right,
yeah,
the end of the 2000s, it's Gaga's album that's going to take us into the next, like, it's going to be an album that becomes seminal in a way for that kind of music.
Yeah.
Whereas
four songs.
Right. And the Sasha Fierce album will simply be another one of Beyonce's albums.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? The singles will be famous, you know, Single Ladies and stuff like that, but I think the Gaga phenomena of that album, right?
Yeah, I thought Beyonce was going to win it. You know, I didn't think I could even hope that Gaga would win it. I think they just feel like her rise has been so meteoric.
I just
meteoric.
Don't know how they arrived. Like, I get that Taylor Swift, like, on the People's Choice Awards, the American Music Awards, I get it because it's popularity. And Taylor Swift certainly was popular this year.
Yeah,
but
I guess
as far
it's
as, like,
just
the
been
merit
produced
of it,
out of, you know, produced really extraordinarily well. And I think that's kind of what they look at.
But the songwriting isn't so great. I mean, the tunes are good. I don't know. I thought that was terrible. I thought the Black Eyed Peas seemed slightly under-rehearsed.
I love the Black Eyed Peas, but they're just, you know, they're kind of got that one, to me, they've got that one thing they do. Kelly was like, what do the other two do besides Will I Am and Fergie? Like, the other two used to at least, like, you know, the one guy used to do backflips, and he used to be at least entertaining.
Well, they're old now.
He's old.
I mean, I like the Black Eyed Peas, and I'm always entertained by them, but last night I don't know if they showed up. I mean, the best thing about Fergie is her husband, let's be honest.
Well,
yeah. I mean, she's cute, don't get me wrong, but the best thing about her is her gorgeous, gorgeous husband.
Well, you know, and then I love the Eminem as much as anybody, but we can't have three rappers on stage that we can't hear half the song, and so you have to black it out. I mean, it's like,
I thought it was a little overdone too. I mean, I can't imagine they swore for those entire chunks of time.
I don't know. Well, I don't know the songs well enough. And I can barely keep up. Now, were you totally disappointed that the Michael Jackson tribute was just one number? And I was really sad I didn't have the 3D glasses because to see Celine Dion in 3D.
I heard they didn't work. I heard that the 3D glasses that they handed out just didn't work on TV. That's what everybody's been saying today in the blogs.
Who were there?
If you were there, they did.
Oh,
and they had old school, like, cheapy ones there.
Yeah.
But, like, people who got them from wherever you could get them, like
Target.
I guess people were saying that they didn't really work.
Huh.
I was disappointed in that. They didn't let anybody really get to go. Like, I wanted Jennifer Hudson to really get to go off. She sounded great, but...
Girl, she sounded so awesome. And that reminded me when that was going on, and I haven't looked at all of the Grammy winners. And obviously there are... I told Kelly last night, I was like, you know, there are hundreds of Grammy awards.
Right, because there's Zydeco music and polka music
there's
and jazz.
There's everything. And best art for a CD cover and everything, you know. Best sound engineer. I mean, whatever. But when Jennifer Hudson came out, I went, where the hell was Spotlight? Was her album?
She won last year.
Oh, she did.
She won Best R&B album from last year.
I can't get enough of that CD at all.
She's wonderful. I know. I like it too.
It made me hit you with my pocketbook. It's my favorite song.
But I wanted her to, I wanted there to be more, like, if you're going to let Smokey Robinson sing, let Smokey Robinson goddamn sing.
How beautiful was he?
He still sounds great too. So handsome.
He's beautiful. And that Usher, I just
And it was so cool that Celine wore an ostrich around her. I actually liked her hair and her horse face more than I usually do.
She looked a little tired, Celine, but boy, she sings good. Her voice feels like she is relaxed. And she's been playing golf.
Well, none of them had a chance to really do it. And even Usher, who I'm not a huge fan of, I think he's sexy, but he's a hell of a dancer. And it would have been nice to, I don't know.
And Carrie Underwood sounded gorgeous, looked good. Her hair looked good.
It just didn't satisfy. First of all, that song is like, I get it. It's one of Michael Jackson's, you know,
well, they wanted to show that video. I think that was the whole point, was to sell people on somebody getting to experience in the Staples Center, because that's where he would have come.
Right.
They wanted, you know, a full house at Staples Center who were there to experience a moment that was
never
going
to happen.
And it didn't work on TV. It didn't work on television.
Most of us are not in the Staples Center. Most of us are at home. And while it's a cool song because Michael cared about it and he sings the shit out of it, it doesn't, I don't know. I would have liked, Smokey Robinson to sing Ben and Usher to do Want to Be Starting Something and Jennifer Hudson to sing the shit out of something else.
Anything she wanted to sing.
I know. It's just, I've yet to see a Michael Jackson tribute that satisfies.
Yeah.
Why can't, is it because he's so great?
Because he's so great. I don't know. I really thought when they announced who those five people were, I went, okay, this is going to be awesome. And I did think every one of them were in fantastic voice.
They sounded
great. Wow, the best of like so many different arenas on that stage right now. You know, who can do this? Who can pull off his range and his scope? And you're right. They just kind of weren't let run. You know,
it's like
when you're riding a horse, you say, nobody gave him the head.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And I don't mean that in the way it sounds.
You don't want to suck a horse's cock. Well, speaking of gay men, tonight is like gay men's birthday night.
Yeah.
Tonight on television is both the premiere of the second season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
Couldn't be more excited about. And on BET is the BET Awards.
Yes.
Or BET Tribute to Whitney Houston.
Oh, dear.
So Mary J's showing up. Patti LaBelle is going to be there.
Well, shit, I got to set my TiVo for that.
Yeah, set it because I don't know.
Jennifer Hudson will be there, I guarantee.
Jennifer Hudson's there. She's going to be there. I just saw a little thing about it. So tonight is like uber gay night, but they're on at the same time. Actually, I think you can watch RuPaul's Drag Race later in the week.
It runs over and over and over.
But I still want to see it so I can talk about it with people. So
absolutely. Well, listen, our guest, we have a Grammy Award winner on our show today.
How amazing! How like timely? Yeah,
timely, totally timely. And when I spoke with her at the end of last week, she was prepping to go to the Grammys and gave me a few minutes of her time. I'm talking about openly lesbian and extraordinarily talented classical guitarist Sharon Isbin, who is coming here to Chicago with Mark O'Connor. And they are here to promote her new album, Journey to the New World, where she also does a whole Joan Baez suite. Joan Baez actually sang on this CD.
Beautiful.
And we're going to play it throughout the show. And so Sharon, when I interviewed her last week, she said, well, we'll see what happens. And now the interview's airing after the Grammys. And she won the 2010 Grammy last night for Best Instrumental Soloist Performance Without an Orchestra. And it's the first time in 43 years that a guitarist has won a second classical Grammy.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big accomplishment. She's just amazing. She appeared on The L Word for a little cameo in the first season. Yeah, she did the score for, was the featured guitarist through the entire score of The Departed.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic Scorsese really? Film.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, she's really fascinating. Plus, she has started 20 years ago, she was asked to start the classical guitar program at Juilliard and now runs the department. So she's like a great one of us,
a great part
of our community that maybe many people don't know about. And she's just delightful. So Sharon Isbin on the show today. She will be at the Harris Theater on March 6th. That's 2 days after Sondheim. So I'm going to be there like for Sondheim on the 4th, Sharon on the 6th, both. I hope that you all will enjoy the show today. And Mitch and I'll be back. We'll be back because we got some news to tell you about, lots of stuff with the election week, and some other stuff in entertainment news besides the Grammys. So we'll be back.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News.
President Obama used his first official State of the Union speech as an opportunity to call for the repeal of the military's ban on openly gay and lesbian service members. This year, I will work with Congress and our military to finally repeal the law that denies gay Americans the right to serve the country they love because of who they are. It's the right thing to do, Obama said, to loud applause, mainly from Democrats.
In Hawaii, the state Senate passed a civil union bill on January 22nd by a vote of 18-7. The bill would let same and opposite sex couples enter into civil unions and have the same rights, benefits, and responsibilities as marriage. Last session, the State House passed a similar bill that only applied to gay and lesbian couples.
HRC has released a state-by-state report detailing GLBT-related legislation in 2009 and an outlook for 2010. The report indicates that there were as many positive bills passed last year as in 2007 and 2008 combined. The report also details expectations for 2010 with the fight for marriage equality and relationship recognition now in Hawaii, Illinois, New Mexico, and Rhode Island, plus state and local efforts to protect GLBT employees.
In California, the Menifee Union School District has decided that the Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary will return to school bookshelves after being pulled for containing what some saw as obscene content. The reference book will be back in fourth and fifth grade classrooms after it was discovered the dictionary has entries about various types of oral sex. However, parents can provide their children alternative dictionaries.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton told Tavis Smiley that she will not serve a second term if President Obama is reelected. Secretaries of State rarely serve 8 years, with many leaving their posts before their first terms end.
The University of Notre Dame has said that the school probably will not change its spirit of inclusion to more explicitly ban sexual orientation discrimination. Hundreds of gay rights advocates have called for the university to add sexual orientation to its non-discrimination policy. However, administrators feel that spirit includes LGBT individuals within the framework of Catholic teaching.
The American Red Cross GLBT Haitian Relief Fund has raised more than $150,000 through approximately 1,300 donations so far. Much was raised from a massive email campaign to the members of three GLBT cruise companies, Olivia, Atlantis, and RSVP.
In New Hampshire, Democrats want Republican State Representative Alfred Baldassaro to step down after he said that the state sold children for $10,000 to unmarried same-sex couples. Baldassaro is one of the main sponsors of the House Bill 1590, which would repeal a state law allowing gay and lesbian couples to marry.
The Indiana Senate has approved a constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage. The Republican-controlled legislative body, introduced by State Representative Carlin Yoder, voted 38-10 to pass it. However, the Democrat-controlled House is expected to defeat the measure, which includes a new restriction on civil unions as well.
In world news, in Russia, Moscow Mayor Yuri Lushkov said that he would never let a gay pride parade march through the city, calling the event satanic. He also called for marchers to be punished. However, gay rights advocate Nikolai Alexeyev has said that a parade will go ahead as planned.
Mexico's Federal Attorney General's office is attempting to overturn Mexico City's same-sex marriage law that passed recently. Slated to take effect in March, the law, which legalized gay adoption, too, has outraged the Roman Catholic Church in Mexico and President Calderon's conservative National Action Party.
In Scotland, the nightclub Arches has used a legal loophole to stay open after police discovered a gay orgy there. The night spot was ordered to close for a month after cops found 30 men in compromising positions. However, after losing two appeals at various courts, Arches will remain open because Scotland's old licensing laws were voided last September.
In India, the movie Dono E Naan John Kyun has stirred controversy months before its release because it supposedly will show Bollywood's first gay kiss. The film will star Kapil Sharma, an actor debuting as an aspiring gay model forced to compromise his morals to further his career. The promotional poster shows two half-nude young men in a passionate embrace.
In entertainment news, a full-page ad denouncing Jamaican singer Buju Banton's Grammy nomination was in the January 29th issue of Variety. The ad, courtesy of a coalition of gay rights groups, urged Grammy organizers to use the January 31st show to criticize music that promotes or celebrates violence against any group of people. Banton, currently in a Florida jail on a drug charge, wrote the 1988 song Boom Bye Bye, which calls for the killing of gay people.
Rosie O'Donnell's making her return to stand-up at Club Skirts Presents The Dinah. O'Donnell will join entertainer Salt and Peppa and pop singer Keisha.
Zelda Rubinstein, the tiny actress who starred in the film Poltergeist, passed away January 28th at the age of 76. The 4'3" actress was a fierce early advocate for the AIDS community.
ABC has decided not to renew Ugly Betty. However, the show will be sent off in style. There are four more episodes left to produce. Ugly Betty's ratings plummeted last season after being moved to Fridays, dropping from 8.1 million to 5.3 million viewers.
Stephen Daigle, a gay rodeo champion who was on CBS's Big Brother, has become a gay porn star. Daigle has signed on to do a man-on-man-on-man sex tape with a company called C1R.com. Director Shishi LaRue reportedly approached Daigle with the idea. Daigle said, "I didn't expect my life to take this path, but when I was presented with the opportunity, I dove in headfirst." Literally.
And ABBA World, an interactive museum based on the wildly successful Swedish band, has opened in London with 25 rooms of music, footage, and memorabilia, and even includes karaoke exhibits and Perform with ABBA, which makes it look as if visitors are performing alongside the actual group. Pretty gay.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Live the fairy tale with the Joffrey Ballet's Cinderella. Only the Joffrey brings Sir Frederick Ashton's Cinderella back to America. The Chicago Tribune calls it a wonderland for adults and a surefire delight for kiddies. Glorious dancing and a magnificent score by Sergei Prokofiev. Buy your tickets before the clock strikes midnight. Cinderella at the Auditorium Theater, February 17th through the 28th. Call 800-982-2787 or order online at Ticketmaster.com now.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 1st, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
The Brothers Sister Plays by out playwright Terrell Alva McCraney is the theatrical event of the Chicago winter, says the Tribune. Three interconnected plays directed by Tina Landau, which the New York Times raves, you experience something rare, a new, authentically original vision. Visit steppenwolf.org for tickets to the Brothers Sister Plays.
About Face Theater presents the long-anticipated production of What Once We Felt, written by Anne-Marie Healy and directed by Chrissy Vanderwerker at the Center on Halsted, playing February 3rd through March 6th. Visit aboutfacetheater.com for tickets.
Court Theater presents The Year of Magical Thinking, based on the award-winning novel by Joan Didion and starring Mary Beth Fisher. A fiercely intelligent, courageous, and witty exploration of loss. For tickets or information about the Chicago premiere of The Year of Magical Thinking, visit courttheater.org.
It's Harlem in the spring of 1943. Elizabeth and Quilly are sisters of a certain age, sharing their quiet lives together. But when they take in a handsome young boarder, their entire world changes abruptly. Don't miss The Old Settler. Tickets are selling quickly. Order yours today by logging on to writerstheater.org.
The Harris Theater hosts two of Broadway's biggest names in March. Stephen Sondheim celebrates his 80th birthday during a special Q&A and conversation with Gary Griffin on March 4th. And Chicago native and Tony Award-winning actress Christine Ebersole performs a concert of Broadway favorites one night only, March 25th. For tickets to both shows, visit harristheaterchicago.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com, now extended through May 30th at the Apollo Theater. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi, you're listening to Lucy Lawless on Windy City Queercast with my favorite gal, Amy.
Thank you.
Grammy Award-winning classical guitarist Sharon Isbin has been called the preeminent guitarist of our time, and yet you may not know her name, and you should. She is an out lesbian who appeared on The L Word. She recently performed at the White House this past November as part of First Lady Michelle Obama's music series. And Sharon is coming to Chicago to perform, among other things, her Joan Baez suite, which has garnered much attention from her award-winning and award-nominated, I know, Grammy Award-nominated best-selling CD, Journey to the New World. And she will be here at the Harris Theater, one of the most amazing facilities in which to hear music or see dance. So we're thrilled to have Sharon here with us on the Queercast. Hey, Sharon, how are you?
I'm fine.
Well, when did you start playing guitar? What? When did you fall in love with that instrument?
I really began by default. Our family moved to Italy. I grew up in Minneapolis, and my father was invited to have a sabbatical year as a scientist. And my older brother said he wanted guitar lessons once we landed in Italy. And his fantasy was to become the next Elvis Presley. So when he learned that the teacher my parents had found had studied with Segovia and was a classical guitarist, he said, not for me. So I volunteered to take his place. I was 9 years old, and that's how I began.
Now, were you always true to the classical form? Did you fall into your teen years of any rock, or did you ever think of plugging it in and going electric?
Well, it was unusual to start right away on a nylon string guitar in those days, and certainly later on, I developed a great love for all styles of music. In fact, I even have a duo with Steve Vai, the heavy metal rock guitarist. Mm-hmm. And we performed quite a bit together. He wrote a piece that the two of us premiered in Paris a couple of years ago. So I've worked with a lot of non-classical people, including Larry Coryell. We had a trio for many years with Lorindo Almeida. So for me, it's really not about boundaries of music, but really about something that moves me and that I find exciting.
What would we be surprised to know about Steve?
About Steve Vai?
Yeah.
He is a great guy. He's really a wonderful person, a fabulous musician, a composer, an all-round Renaissance man, I'd have to say.
So, as I mentioned, you're going to be performing this Joan Baez suite, which was kind of crafted and created for you. But I know Joan Baez was a huge influence on you, as has been folk music. I mean, you said all kinds of music, but... Were you first introduced to Joan Baez, and what did that influence truly mean to you?
Well, I grew up as a teenager listening to Joan Baez, and certainly she was one of my great folk heroes, and still is. Mm-hmm. So her music has always just really moved me in a very powerful way, and I didn't know how that would really intersect with my life until the composer John Duarte agreed to write a suite for me that was based on songs that she made famous in the early part of her career, and that came to be titled the Joan Baez Suite. So it's one of the works I'm performing in the Chicago concert. It's for solo guitar, and it's the real centerpiece of the album I did for Sony called Journey to the New World. And when Joan Baez heard this suite, she offered to sing on the album. So she actually joins me in two vocal numbers that are really quite extraordinary. She sings Wayfaring Stranger and Go Away From My Window on the Journey album.
Ugh, it's such a beautiful, beautiful album. When I think of Joan Baez, and I think of, you know, she was such a political voice at that time. It was almost unable to... what's the word I'm looking for? Disentangle her politics and her musical artistry.
Oh, it was always very much something that was integrated within her. And I don't know if you saw the recent extraordinary documentary on her on American Masters.
But I did. It was brilliant.
It's really so worth seeing. And the footage from the civil rights era, it's walking hand in hand with Martin Luther King. It's very, very moving.
Yeah.
And something that is quite powerful.
Well, so you had your own political moment over a decade ago. You decided to come out, and I don't know if that was a political move for you or not. What was the decision to come out in, I think it was 95, is that correct?
Well, it was
in a public way.
Simple. I was asked by Out Magazine if I would do an interview, and at first I asked permission of my press agent, who thought it was fine, and then I asked my management, and they said, well, I don't think we can take the heat. I said, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, it might affect our ability to book you between New York and California.
Mm.
So they didn't really give their sanction. So I figured, well, let's wait a year and see what happens. And then during that time, Melissa Etheridge came out, Katie Lang came out, began each of them selling platinum records. So when Out approached me a year later, I returned to my management. I said, hey, you know, this could be a good thing for you.
Yeah.
And so that at that point, they said yes.
You really were on that front wave of when Lesbian Chic was on the cover of Newsweek or Time. And I hadn't realized that it was at that exact same time that the women musicians and artists were starting to really, you know, authentically express who they were. And I think many of us wasn't a big surprise for some of these women because they weren't really living a closeted life. Were you living closetedly, or did the artists?
I've been
and
out
people...
since I was 18.
Yeah.
I just hadn't been open in the press because it really has nothing to do with my music, and I still think it has nothing to do with my music. I think it's not terribly interesting in terms of how I play Bach or how I play jazz or anything else that I do. I think it's just a matter-of-fact part of life, but it's something that I certainly would never and have never hidden.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting that you said that your publicist thought it would affect you from New York to California, but obviously...
My management, not my publicist.
Your management.
My publicist was always very supportive.
Yeah, but that, you know, on a global scale, people could really care less.
Exactly, and it had no negative impact at all.
Well, and obviously...
And in fact, it just opens you up to a bigger audience, and I think it's wonderful to be a role model for a lot of people. I mean, when you consider that something in 3 of 10 adolescent attempted suicides are by gay youth, it's a horrifying fact, and it's something that really we need to address as a society as a whole. So if my being open and my being very natural and supportive of my own lifestyle, that can, of course, encourage others to feel comfortable about themselves and have self-confidence. And I've gotten that kind of feedback from many people. And also as a guitarist, you know, being a woman in this field is something that is also rather revolutionary. And to be able to be a role model for others who might be interested in playing the instrument, that's a great thing too.
Talk to me about that. You are definitely shaping the new artists and the young talents as the head of the guitar department at Juilliard. What do you see as the future of classical guitar, and how are you inspired by the young students that you see on there at Juilliard, the best
in
the country?
I've had a great experience. Juilliard asked me 20 years ago to create their first ever guitar department, and I've been able to really mold it in the image of what I believe in. So it's very integrated with the other departments that my students get to work with: singers, wind players, string players, orchestra, and it was very much welcomed by the Juilliard community. And my students have come from over 15 different countries.
Mm.
Many have returned to become the premier players where they live. So it's been a very exciting process of working with some of the finest young talents around. And it's always a two-way street. They inspire me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very glad to have been able to be part of this process. And the other important part of the instrument is building a literature. So I've worked with some of the really great composers of our time, people like John Coriano or Lucas Foss, Chris Rouse, Pan Dunn, Ned Rorem, many, many names that are well known in the classical community. And it's exciting to be able to leave behind music that will be able to inspire other generations.
When you talk about your philosophy in shaping the department, you're described as such an emotional player. What is your philosophy and your approach, if you had to sum it up? And that's, I know, a loaded question.
Well, my guitar is really my instrument of expression. So if I'm lost in the music and really feeling that connection to somehow the cosmic world through music and what the composer has written and communicating that to an audience. I mean, it's very exciting to sit on the stage and feel this union with several thousand people at the same time and feel their energy. It's something I can't even begin to describe. It's somehow it really makes you feel the universality of the world and the connection we all have.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about putting together this compilation, this CD that has just received so much praise and that you are Grammy nominated for, Journey to the New World, a voyage in song from the British Isles to the New World. There are so many influences on this CD, including the Joan Baez suite, which we've mentioned, including we can start talking, I guess, about Mark O'Connor, who the virtuoso violinist will be playing with you here in Chicago at the Harris.
Mark is one of the premier fiddle players in the world. I mean, just to be able to work with him has been such a joy. And this whole journey, this whole voyage, it's really tracing, in a way, the evolution of folk music from the 16th century in Old England and Ireland and Scotland, even a lute duet that I do with myself by a 16th century composer based on Greensleeves, and music of John Dowland, crossing the ocean, and these immigrants who came from the old country to the new world, their music came with them and became transformed. So Mark O'Connor's suite that we're going to be playing together, the Strings and Threads suite, is very much a part of his own background. His family, they were potato farmers who came from Ireland and crossed the ocean to find a better life, and settling in the 13 colonies and moving westward in the great exploration of the New World. That is represented by the 13 short movements, each of which is something of a chronological evolution of the story of folk music of violin. So you've got everything from blues and ragtime and bebop and bluegrass and waltz and Irish jigs. It's a very exciting suite that communicates the spirit of America.
Hmm. Did Mark come to you, or did you go to Mark, or how do those relationships get formed for somebody that you go, wow, we click, we should really do something together?
Well, Mark and I met a number of years ago, and at that time, I had suggested this particular piece because I'd heard his solo violin version of it, and I thought it would just sound great for the two of us. So it took a while for that evolution to happen, and when it did, Mark had actually contacted me when he moved back to New York, and that's how the project was born. We premiered it a couple of years ago at Orchestra Hall in Minneapolis, and I said, this sounds really so perfect for my new album. Would you join me in the studio next month?
And what was that experience like? I mean, this being in the studio on this CD, I mean, being with Mark and being with Joan Baez, I would imagine it was a very thrilling and emotional experience to be with one of your, you know, your earliest influences, and then also to be with somebody who is inspiring you so much currently.
I can't say enough about both Mark and Joan as people, very generous, very warm-hearted, and It was a great experience, and to be driving with Joan Baez and hearing her humming in the back seat of the car as we're on the way to the studio, it's sort of a reality check. That's Joan Baez humming in the back seat.
So you do go into the studio with all musicians at the same time? Is that how you like to record?
No, we did it in separate sessions. So the session with Joan was done at the George Lucas Skywalker Ranch out in California, and with Mark, the sessions were done at SUNY Purchase Concert Hall here in New York, as well as my solo sessions.
Yeah. But I mean, I just meant that you were with Joan Baez while you recorded her song.
Oh, absolutely. I can't imagine doing it separately without being there with the person. I mean, that's where the magic is born. When you hear her sing Wayfaring Stranger, there's a symbiosis of unity of spirit that happens between us that is very, very magical, and that can only happen when you're together in the same spot.
Yeah, absolutely. You speak of being out at the Lucas Ranch, and I would imagine that your brush with the whole world of Hollywood and Los Angeles deepened because you were the featured soloist on the soundtrack of Martin Scorsese's Academy Award-winning film, The Departed, and in an enormous part of that score. Talk to me about working on that film, and how did that opportunity come about?
Well, it's funny because I'd always wanted to do something for a film in terms of music, and so this was my first and really amazing opportunity when I met Howard Shore at a Recording Academy event, and it turned out that he was just beginning to start to compose the music for The Departed, and in the process of writing, he discovered that it was all going to be guitar. So he contacted me and said, are you free to go into the studio in a couple of weeks? And that's how that project was born.
It is interesting. You are this sole woman in these land of men. Because that is such a, you know, it's such a male, I don't know, it seems like it's such a testosterone filled film. And yet the sweetness and the pain and the pathos of these men comes through so much in that score, you know.
You're very observant, because what's really remarkable, this is the centerpiece of the Howard Shore score soundtrack, is Billy's theme, and that takes place during the Leonardo DiCaprio character's therapy session. And of course the images that are projected, that his flashbacks, they're all very violent, but the music is just heart-wrenchingly beautiful and very sensuous and very evocative and very moving, and it really gives you a window into the inner passions and feelings of the character that would not be expressed without the music.
Yeah, are you hoping to repeat that again, work with Howard again, or work on a soundtrack or a film score again?
Oh, I'd certainly love to. It was a great experience.
Yeah. So what is making your heart sing these days? What is in your iPod or CD player? I always love to ask any singer or musician that question. And what would we be surprised
to
know
is there?
It's so eclectic
and diverse. And one of my favorite artists is Loreena McKennitt from Canada.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, some of the new things that happen these days are always intriguing, from Lady Gaga to Pink.
So I would be remiss if I didn't mention, at least to my audience, that you appeared on The L Word. And how did that come about, and were you a fan of the show?
Well, I saw the first episode, and afterwards I kept getting emails from friends saying, you should play at the Planet. And I thought, well, you know, by the fourth message, I thought, well, maybe there's something to this, because it would never have occurred to me.
Oh, funny.
So, it turned out that Eileen Chaykin loved the idea and wrote me into the script in the second season. So I appear on the episode called Luminous. And it was really wild. I went out to Vancouver to do the filming, and I shared scenes with Jennifer Beals and with Pam Grier. They were really, really lovely to work with, very welcoming, such nice people. And there was a lot of downtime in the process of filming, because you have to change the set and the lighting for each different shoot. So I would just entertain the troops out there by playing for them, and we all had a good time.
Oh, wow. Well, that's really, really an amazing experience. And I probably, you would have never thought in 1995 or 6, when you were having those conversations with the manager and publicist, well, one day I'll play on the first ever lesbian television series. And who would have thought that would have happened? It's
they would have had an aneurysm at that moment.
Oh, it's a journey to a new world, Sharon Isbin, let me tell you.
Well, it was also an amazing experience to play at the White House. And I was an invited guest on the music series that Michelle Obama has created. So this was the classical music event. And in fact, you can watch the entire video of my performance by just going to my website, SharonIsbin.com, and the link to see the video is right there at the top. And I'm just very impressed as a musician that this administration takes classical music so seriously, its role in educating young people and helping with test scores and really being part of the fabric of our society, something to be proud of in our culture.
And how do we, because that seems like that event truly was a great synergy of the various factions of your work, whether it has been with your work at Juilliard, your work as a classical artist, and in a way in being a pioneer to what the next, you know, what you are handing off to the next, to the horizon, I guess, if you will, of classical music. You know, how do we, as just lay people, as people who are not in your position, continue to encourage this administration and our own communities of the importance of music and arts education in our schools and for our nation in general to really support art?
Well, I think that it's so clear that without art, we wouldn't really have a society, and we wouldn't know how much we miss it until it was gone. And it's important that young people have the opportunity to gain an exposure to the extraordinary cultures of the past and of the present. It's not just an archaic form. It's something that's a very living, breathing part of the community. And when I go out and perform, I often do school shows so that I give presentations to kids anywhere from the age of 6 to 16. And it's great to see their excitement, whether it's something contemporary, whether it's Bach, whether it's Spanish music, Latin American music. I do all these kinds of styles, and they don't know they're not supposed to like something. So they love when they're exposed to it, and that's the key here. It's like any language. You learn a language by being exposed to it,
yeah,
and you learn to appreciate it.
Well, I hope that everyone else will come out to, because I am going to be there. The Harris Theater is presenting Sharon Isbin and Mark O'Connor Saturday night, March 6th, one night only at 7:30. If you've not been to the Harris Theater, and I know many of you have because we have promoted a lot of the fantastic events that they have there, it is really such an amazing facility that we're so lucky in the past handful of years to have here in Chicago.
And you're also very lucky to have one of the greatest patrons of the arts living in Chicago, Joan Harris and her late husband,
yeah,
Irving Harris,
absolutely,
after whom the hall is named, similarly to the beautiful concert hall at the Aspen Music Festival. I go
yeah
out every summer to head the guitar program in Aspen.
Oh, wow.
So the Harrises have done so much to nurture music and all kinds of social projects,
mm-hmm,
and that they really are a model of what patronage can be in our world today by those who care.
Yeah, it is really an extraordinary world-class facility. So if you would like to get your tickets and get more information for that show here, if you're in the Chicago area or can come to the Chicago area on Saturday, March 6th, visit harristheaterchicago.org. We'll have that linked in our show notes. If you'd like more on Sharon, her website, as she said, is sharonisbin.com. You can see her performance there at the White House with the Michelle Obama Music Series. You can also hear other interviews with her. You can purchase her music at iTunes, Amazon, and everybody be watching on Grammy night as she is Grammy nominated for her new CD, Journey to the New World. Sharon, thank you so much for being on with us. It's been such
thank
a delight.
You.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
So Mitchell,
mm-hmm,
we helped give birth to a Grammy Award winner in 2008 with Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like we were a good notch on her belt.
Yeah, no shit.
And now Sharon Isbin, interviewer one week, the next week she's winning a Grammy. So do you think Michael and Cheyenne, they weren't nominated this year?
No, I don't think they were eligible for this year, but it would be interesting if they get nominated next year for best traditional pop album.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's exactly what they did. I do find it weird that Streisand wasn't nominated for her
Are
her
you album. Kidding? With Diana Krall?
Nothing.
Are you kidding me?
Not one nomination.
Was she eligible in this year? Or do you think it'll be next year?
I think so. Maybe it's next year. I don't know. It was weird that it was...
I got that in October.
Is that too late?
I don't know.
I mean, that's 2009.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It was just interesting because it did really well. It went to number one.
Oh, it's such a gorgeous...
It's gorgeous.
Gorgeously
even
produced.
People I know who don't like Barbara.
You kind of just nominate her to have her come and sing.
Well, that's...
I mean,
how cool would it be to have Diana Krall play and Streisand sing live on TV?
Oh, my God.
So that was weird. But who knows what other
And
guests.
Liza did not win.
Liza did not
Which
win.
Which CD was this for?
It was for her Live at the Palace.
Yeah. You know what I didn't know? Was
what?
That Kate McGarrigal, Rufus Wainwright's
yeah
mother, died.
She died this week, yeah.
Which I did not know. She died this week?
Yeah,
this
she just died
week?
Yeah, this past week, yeah.
Ah, I did not know that. Kelly didn't know that was Rufus Wainwright's mother.
Yeah.
But, love and hugs out to Rufus.
Yeah.
And his sister, who's been on the show many times.
I guess she's been sick for quite some time. It's funny, I've seen the entire family. I've seen Martha and Rufus
uh-huh
several times.
Yep.
I saw Kate and Anna McGarrigle at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and I saw Loudon Wainwright at the Old Town School of Folk
yeah
Music.
Yeah, very talented family.
Sort of amazing.
Yep.
I mean,
Kind of under the radar, though, yeah. I think, for many people.
Where is Rufus? He's writing an opera, right? Why is he?
I need
a new CD.
The one thing we didn't talk about, though, was Green Day and this new American Idiot musical.
I'm so into it.
And, you know, do you know a lot about that?
I do, because there were two of my friends who were on the stage last night.
So talk to me about, is it all adapted just from that
American
album?
Idiot, because it was, you know, that American Idiot was sort of a rock opera.
Yeah, like a Tommy. It was like their version, their year, their
American
Tommy.
Anybody who knows me knows that I am like, if it was written, you know, post 1975, I probably won't listen to it.
Yeah.
Or you'll have to force me to listen to it. I'm so old school. I'm a Gershwin, Cole Porter boy.
Yep.
And I love American. It's one of my absolute favorite CDs of all time, American Idiot. I think it's so genius. And it's so not my kind of music. So I'm actually really excited. I mean, I love that they've gone from, like, you know, a punk power trio to, like, a Broadway musical.
But do you think this was their idea or someone's idea and came to them? And do you think it was spawned by Spring Awakening and kind of what Junk and Chic did with that?
I think that it was. I think it was someone else's idea. I think that, I think that someone said, you know, you wrote a rock opera, you should get it on stage like The Who eventually did with Tommy, right?
Right.
And they said, cool, let's do it.
Yeah.
And so they got these amazing singers. I knew two of the singers who were on stage last night. And
it's going to
Broadway. Actually, another one of my friends actually got a shout out from Stephen Colbert. Peter Gwynn is one of the guys who wrote that comedy album for Stephen Colbert.
Oh,
and I was my friend just got a shout out on the Grammys.
Yeah, that's cool.
But Peter Gwynn writes for the Stephen Colbert show. But
it
is. It's going to be on Broadway this spring.
Huh.
I'm excited about it because I love the music. Yeah. I love American Idiot. I love their last one too.
I hope we can find somebody to talk about that at some point for a podcast from some part of the creative team. That would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Because I think obviously our community will be really excited about it with it being a new musical theater piece. And
And you know, there's that, you know, Green Day has always been very sort of anti-homophobia and, you know, with all their sort of like rock and roll attitude. They're some pretty sweet boys.
Yeah. They're kind of the REM of that generation.
Yeah.
They're
so cute and so talented.
Yeah. He looks 12.
I know, and what is he, like 87 now?
I don't know.
I mean, he's been around for a long time, right?
He's like 12.
I know, with a lot of eyeliner.
Adorable. All right, well, that's our Grammy show, and who knew it was going to be so Grammy all around?
Grammy.
Don't miss Sharon Isbin, and if you don't have Journey to the New World, pick it up. It's great. Download it on iTunes, and she and Mark will both be at the Harris Theater. I'll be there on March 6th. Hope you can make it. And coming up, we've got Terrell McCraney, who is he is just the hot, hot, hot new African-American out playwright, actor, director. The brother-sister plays, they've been heating it up from coast to coast and now over in the West End. And sitting down and talking with him about what has been just an astronomical rise as well. Kind of in Gaga-esque in the theater world for this young man,
which is
gay,
a Steppenwolf
man,
now, right?
It is indeed. And also Gary Griffin coming up on upcoming shows to talk about it. He's going to sit down face-to-face in front of all of us to interview Stephen Sondheim on his 80th birthday.
Oh, tell Gary. I haven't seen Gary in years. Tell him
big opportunity for him, plus much, much more. So don't forget to vote, people. You're hearing this podcast on Tuesday. Please vote today. Vote in your primary. Make your voice heard so you don't regret it later. All right, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.